ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you could schedule work around your most productive periods, what would your day look like? Our personal circadian rhythms affect how well we think and work with others at different times of the day. So why are there so many 9 a.m. meetings? Hello, I'm Lisa Leong on ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. In this episode, we're going to learn about circadian-informed leadership and how it could put an end to the battle against a worker's natural sleep cycle. Stefan Folk is a professor of management at the University of Sydney Business School and co-director of its Body, Heart and Mind in Business Research Group. Now, even though he's not a sleep scientist, his research focuses on the performance implications of physiological processes in the work setting. Stefan, hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So what is a circadian rhythm then, in simple terms?
In 2017, actually, the Nobel Prize in Medicine was given to researchers that had discovered that little brain mechanism in the human brain. And it regulates essentially when during the day we are energized, when we are tired. It's very closely related to our sleep rhythm. And it's a very important, very deeply ingrained process. And these circadian rhythms are more or less the same in terms of the shape of them. But they're very different in terms of when their peaks and troughs are. We call the peak of a circadian rhythm, we call the chronotype. The chronotype is essentially a behavioral representation of our circadian rhythm. It tells us when we are most energized, when we are mentally, physically, and emotionally at our best, and when we are in a trough and when we are low. And people are quite different in terms of when these peaks and troughs happen during the day.
Yeah, why would we be different? When you're explaining it, it sounds to me like we might all, you know, shouldn't we all be the same?
So why these differences exist, there are different theories about it, but from an evolutionary perspective, that was advantageous for groups because you would always have somebody who is awake very early in the morning and you would have people that are up late into the night and they could essentially protect the group, alert the group in case there was a danger, in case there was some kind of attack or a predator. So groups that had this diversity had evolutionary survival advantage compared to other groups, and that might be one reason why we have evolved these differences.
And are these baked in then, or can we somehow change these?
So they change over life with age, but in a certain life period, they change very little. So I think there's research showing that over a 10-year period, your circadian rhythm or your chronotype changes by 7 minutes. And a lot of people want to become morning people. It's very hard to change your circadian rhythm.
Now, I want to pick you up on the point about our peak, which you're calling chronotypes. And I've heard the categories of Lark used in relation to this. Can you go a little bit deeper on chronotype then and how we might be able to use this?
So chronotype is essentially just like a behavioral representation of our circadian rhythm. And in order to explain it, it's often used in terms of categories, you know, so that people can identify with being an early lark, a late lark, an owl. But it is essentially a continuous variable. It makes, like if you do a test, for example, it will give you a score. And that score will tell you whether you fall into that category or that category. And sometimes on a 100-point scale, the difference is 1 point. And it doesn't make a lot of sense just because of 1 point difference to say somebody's a different type. So we have to look at it more like a continuous thing. You can peak at any time during the day, essentially. And people are either leaning more towards morningness, more towards eveningness. And that is essentially enough for us to understand that people are different. Some people are really better earlier during the day. Some people are really better later during the day, but unfortunately, we expect everybody to be better earlier during the day.
And just for people who might want to test this, how do they discover it? What sort of quizzes or surveys are the best that you would recommend?
The most simple way to do it is, when do you wake up on a weekend without an alarm clock? Do you still get up at 6 a.m. as you do during the week, or are you sleeping in? That's already a strong indication, right? But they're questionnaires. So you can measure circadian rhythms physiologically because they follow our body temperature, There's a body temperature cycle during the day. There's a melatonin secretion cycle during the day. And based on these, they have developed questionnaires that are quite accurate and have been around for decades because they are very useful and valid. And one of these questionnaires, for example, is an easy one to use, is the morning eveningness questionnaire, MEQ. You can just Google it. And it's freely available, and people can do the test and see where they are. But I would argue most people know what they are. They, however, often assume that others are like them, and that's where the problems start.
So we know about the lark and we know about the night owl. What do you call the people in the middle who actually perform best in the afternoon, and what do we call them?
Well, they're sometimes called intermediate types, right? But as I said, people came up with all kinds of different terms, like dolphins and I don't know what.
Dolphins. Yes, I want to label people, Stefan. So
yeah, so I rather use it as a continuous concept. But estimates are that around 20% of the population are like more morning people, 20% are more evening people, and 60% are somewhere in the middle. But there can still be differences in the middle.
We're talking about a scale here. Let's reveal our hands then. So on the scale, I am extreme lark, so very, very early morning. I might get up anywhere between 4 a.m. and 5 a.m. So that's me revealing. Stefan, reveal please.
Well, I'm an evening person because people do research on things that personally affect them. And I've been disadvantaged as an evening person my entire life. And I argue for evening people and make a case for them and say, because that morningness bias, which has historical reasons, means that most important things in life happen during the first half of the day. It starts in school, tests in school, exams in university are in the first half of the day. Most important meetings are during the first half of the day, job interviews. That's when morningness people really shine, but eveningness people have to work with a disadvantage, essentially. And as a lot of research shows, that we often underestimate the capacity of a large fraction of the population because we test them at the wrong time of day. So I am an evening person. But let me ask you a question. When do you go to bed?
I go to bed at 8:30 for 9 p.m.
Okay, very good. My sister is just like you. She goes to bed at 8 p.m. In broad daylight, really. And
it
just shows that we are fundamentally different people.
Now, Stefan, I hear that there's an online trend called 5 to 9 before 9 to 5.
I don't know if you've seen that. So people talking about all the things that they do before they go to work in order to be more productive, to achieve their goals. People get up extra early to work out, to read a self-enhancement book or to get on top of the work of the day. And if they do it like you, if they go to bed early enough, then that's okay because they get sufficient sleep. But most people cut down on their sleep in order to get up extra early, right?
Okay. Mark Wahlberg gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Stefan, thoughts and feelings?
Yeah, well, this is my prime example because somehow he always gets into my social media. So Mark Wahlberg, I think he gets up at 3 a.m. I don't know. He usually hits the gym at 4 a.m. Then he works out at 5 a.m. He is at home. He cleans the entire house. Then at 6 a.m. he starts making breakfast. At 7 a.m. he wakes the family. Everybody's happy because Mark is ripped, the breakfast is made, the house is clean, you know, and he kind of implies that everybody should be like this. And how can you expect to be successful if you're not like me, you know? And it works for Mark because he's probably a morning person, but it doesn't work for most other people. And we have to be aware of that. And we shouldn't all strive to be like Mark Wahlberg.
And so are you saying that we can't change our natural circadian rhythm by getting up earlier?
You can get up earlier, but the problem with that is because in particular evening type, they stay up late into the night. It's often because their system don't settle down. So you need melatonin. Melatonin is a very important hormone for sleep onset. The release of hormone in their body is just delayed. So even if these people go to bed earlier, they often can't fall asleep earlier, force themselves to wake up earlier. So they're cutting off important sleep. And depending on whether you cut off sleep during the first part of the sleep or towards the end of the sleep, it has different effects, but in both cases, it has negative effects.
Can you tell us about the implications on performance at work by cutting off that sleep? And you can go a little bit deeper on this.
So the way the sleep works is we go through multiple sleep cycles every night. And every sleep cycle, 4 to 6 sleep cycles, every sleep cycle contains what we call REM sleep and NREM sleep. So REM sleep is rapid eye movement, sleep and NREM sleep is non-rapid eye movement sleep. It's simply if you would open somebody's eyelids during REM sleep, you would see their eyes darting around rapidly. So it's quite creepy, actually. But it has different functions. So when people are in NREM sleep is when the brain, and it's important to understand, during sleep, the brain doesn't rest. The brain is incredibly active while we're sleeping because that's when it can disconnect from the outside world and can actually get on top of the tasks of the day. During the day, while we are conscious and awake, the brain struggles to keep us alive, right? To steer us through life, to make sure we do the right things, but it's very busy. So all the information that we obtain during the day, it can only really store in short-term memory. It takes that and just shoves it on a shelf. And if it doesn't take it off the shelf at a later point, it will just disappear, right? So it has to move information that was stored in short-term memory. It has to move it into long-term memory so we retain it. And that happens during NREM sleep. During NREM sleep, the brain sorts through a lot of information obtained during the day, discards information that is not important, and stores important information in long-term memory. So that's important for learning, for example, and retention of knowledge. And then during REM sleep, the brain starts working with that information. It actually connects different pieces of information and comes up with new ideas. And sometimes, quite often actually, people wake up with new ideas in the morning. So I have my best ideas really in the morning under the shower, when the shower kind of washes away the fog of the sleep. And then the thing that I was still thinking about before I went to bed essentially comes back to me. And the brain kept working on this at night. So NREM sleep is for learning and for knowledge retention. REM sleep is for creativity, for knowledge creation. So that's how these things work in combination with our circadian rhythm.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and my guest is Stefan Fogg, Professor of Management at the University of Sydney Business School. We're talking about circadian rhythms and performance at work. Later, how to implement circadian-informed leadership. Stefan, what does the research show then about our performance at work when we're not in sync with our natural body clock? Do you want to take us through it?
Yeah, so we have to think about us going through peaks and troughs during the day. It has three different types of effects. It affects our mental capacity, our emotional capacity, and our physical capacity, right? So mentally, during our circadian peak, we are sharper. We are more alert, we are more attentive, we are better able to deal with difficult tasks, we can push ourselves harder, we are more resilient. So we are really better able to do all the mental and cognitive aspects of work. Emotionally, we are more, again, resilient, we are more patient, we are less irritable, better to work with, better to deal with in terms of interactions with others. In office settings, obviously, we're more interested in the mental and effective tasks, right? So when can we do our mentally most demanding work? And when are we effectively, emotionally best capable to deal with coworkers? And when we should stay to ourselves because we are really not very enjoyable to deal with.
I can understand, you know, then at the peak what we should be doing. So when we're sort of having a trough, is there any work that we could effectively be doing during a trough?
So at our peak, what I always say is do the things that you're really dreading, really the things that you are procrastinating on, because that's the things that you find really difficult and hard and challenging. And when you're at your circadian peak, that's when you are at your best, when you're capable to do this, right? So some people find looking at their taxes dreadful, others enjoy it, right? So it's really different. And then there are other tasks, however, that are more routine, right? So classic examples, emails. And there's what we call the morning inbox problem. And that is in particular for morning people a problem. They come to work, the mailbox is still full with emails from the previous day that didn't get through or that came in during the night, and they start working through their mailbox. And they're wasting their best hours during the day to do routine work. And once they're done with this, they have essentially passed their peak during the day, and then they only start working on the really difficult tasks. For evening types, that's actually a good strategy, right? So you're still transitioning in the day, in the morning. You are not really there yet. So more routine tasks, paperwork, emails, they can be done also when we are in our trough because we can still function, right? But we have to understand when we are working in our trough, we are working in a kind of high-risk mode, right? So we are more likely to miss something. So important emails, important decisions, we should always have a second set of eyes on our work when we do this during our trough, right? So that is essentially the difference in terms of mental work. And emotionally, it's like, when should we interact with others where it could be difficult? And that's something for leaders specifically, right? When do you have the difficult conversation and so on and so forth? But yeah.
So Stefan, you've done research on circadian informed leadership. Tell us about it.
Circadian leadership essentially has two aspects to it. One is understanding yourself. And most people have a pretty good understanding of what kind of type they are, but people still not always get it right in terms of consciously thinking about how they organize their work day, when they perform what kind of tasks. But more importantly for leaders, it's obviously the interaction with others, right? So when and how can I interact with others, and how can I leverage my team and work with my team? Because my team most likely consists of a variety of types. And that is often obviously not recognized. So I do a lot of executive education. I do a lot of work with companies. And when I work with leaders and explain this, a lot of them, the most simple takeaway is that they go and say, oh, I understand now why my 9 a.m. meeting on a Monday morning doesn't work, and why there are some people who just seem to be unengaged and flat and not, you know, responding the way I want them is simply because they are mentally not there yet, right? And some people are even grumpy at that time and not very nice to deal with, even though otherwise they're quite nice people. In terms of working with teams, it starts with understanding where your team members are, what kind of types they are, you know? And then you can work with this and you can leverage this, right? So when should you have a difficult conversation with a team member? It also depends on your own circadian rhythm, right? So when are you patient? When are you less irritable? When are you more likely to be able to deal with that situation? But also, when is that team member able to, you know, be objective and engage well? But also in terms of working, right? Sometimes you need somebody to back you up in a task where you both have to be really at your peak simultaneously because you work on a very intense task. Sometimes you need somebody to back you up when you're in your trough and you need that second set of eyes and somebody who checks what you're doing. And depending on that, you can work with different team members throughout the day. And also what can happen is that, and we have some examples in this article that we just published in the Harvard Business Review, where in particular, when you work across countries, you get a request to submit something at 8 a.m. in the morning to a foreign regulator, for example, right? So you can run the entire team down the entire night in order to get this across the line. Or you think about whether you can have morning pods and evening pods. Which of your team members are better able to work a little bit later into the night? What team members are better early in the morning? So the evening pod starts on it, prepares the document that needs to be prepared, works on it as long as they can, then write a handover protocol for the morning team to take over early in the morning, to check everything that has been done, to complete the task, to be that second set of eyes. Much better than running the entire team flat until early in the morning, and then when you are about to submit, everybody's too tired to really be able to catch any major errors that might be in the work.
So, Stefan, it sounds like you're kind of mapping, you're sort of learning about everyone's chronotypes, and then you're sort of mapping this out so that you've got a workflow that works with these circadian rhythms.
That is the aim. It is not always possible, and the most common criticism I get about this is, what do you expect us to organize work around everybody's individual preferences? And that is certainly not the case. However, that shouldn't prevent us from talking about it, from understanding each other. Even if you cannot do that, it's still helpful to understand why might that person not be at their fullest capacity at that point. You know, some compassion for, and also understanding to not misattribute somebody's low level of energy as lack of engagement, but as something that's deeply physiologically ingrained, right? So understand where people are when they are at their best. We cannot always work around these rhythms, but we can definitely think about them and talk about them and then see how we can incorporate them into our daily work.
In your experience, is there an optimum window that could potentially suit everyone rather than sort of tweaking the whole thing so that we never have to work together?
Well, it's most likely in the middle of the day, right? I used to have a PhD supervisor who was a morning person and who was really running out of steam early in the afternoon. That's when I really got into my peak. So we kind of met in the middle where he was still functional and I was already functional. So the middle of the day, I guess, is a good time, even though you got to be conscious about the fact that there is a so-called post-lunch dip in our circadian rhythm. There is a little dip around 2 p.m. You can show this. So what we're essentially suggesting is that there is a core work time in the middle of the day, let's say from 10 to 3 p.m., where people have to be available for joint work, for meetings, and so on and so forth. And then there is time in the morning or in the evening where people can add hours, depending on whether they are more morning types or evening types, in order to make up their full hours. And some of this work can be remote at home. Some of this work needs to be in the office for team building and other aspects.
So outside the collaboration times, you could work in an asynchronous way.
I guess most workflows have components that are teamwork based, where you have to simultaneously work, and like meetings usually, right? Brainstorming sessions. But there are also significant parts of the day where people can take that work into their individual workflow and work at it at their own time and then still interact with other stream and other things, but they don't have to do it simultaneously. And when we look at work time flexibility, probably the one good thing that came out of COVID is that a lot of companies realized that providing more flexibility is not as bad as they thought it would be. The problem is most of this is still workplace flexibility. People are allowed to work from home, but there's still very little work time flexibility, as in you work from home, but you still have to be part of that 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. team meeting. So there we can still shift things a little bit to what's the middle of the day, probably.
You mentioned that one reaction to this might be from a leader, oh, you know, why do I have to cater for all of these preferences? So can you make the case for why, what the benefits are to the organization and to the people in your team for actually doing this mapping?
Well, you just get the best out of your people, right? It's not just good for individual employees. It's good for the organization because you want your people probably to operate at close to 100% of their capacity. You have great talent, but they're only operating at 60% of their capacity. You're not getting the best out of your people in terms of their actual work product, but it's also much more pleasant to interact with team members in teams when people are obviously emotionally more resilient, less irritated, less antagonistic. But we see it also more and more as a talent attraction and retention strategy. So in particular, younger generations, and I see it in the universities currently, a lot of the current generation that is entering the workplace, they have certain expectations. They are much more concerned about work-life balance and being able to have a healthy, sustainable career. And for example, my generation was, we would just, you know, work late into the night. We would work weekends, whatever it took. And I'm really admire these new generations that are much more concerned about their health and well-being. And for them to be able to align their work more with their natural rhythms and their biology is something that they find attractive. And that's something that will help to distinguish companies in terms of talent attraction as an employer, as an attractive employer, and also helps to build sustainable careers.
Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you.
Stefan Fogg is a professor of management at the University of Sydney Business School and a co-director of its Body, Heart and Mind in Business Research Group. Thanks for listening to This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Tim James on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you'd like to hear more from us, you can like or subscribe to our show on ABC Listen or anywhere you get your podcasts. Please share the love as well. Send it to a friend or a colleague you think would enjoy This Working Life as much as you. I'm Lisa Leong, and until next time, work it like a charm.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.